Here's an experiment for you. Take passionate experts in human resource technology. Invite cross-industry experts from inside and outside HR. Mix in what's happening in people analytics today. Give them the technology to connect. Hit record. Pour their discussions into a beaker. Mix thoroughly. And voila, you get the HR Data Labs podcast, where we explore the impact of data and analytics to your business. We may get passionate and even irreverent, but count on each episode challenging and enhancing your understanding of the way people data can be used to solve real-world problems. Now, here's your host, David Turetsky.
Hello and welcome to the HR Data Labs podcast. I'm your host, David Turetsky. And like always, we try and bring you fascinating people inside and outside the world of human resources to bring you context and insight into HR data, analytics, and technology and what's actually happening in the world today and what we think might actually happen in the future. Today, we have with us Tim Sackett. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And we have our friend, Dwight Brown. Hey, Dwight.
Hey, David.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm tired.
So we're at the HR Tech. Welcome. HR Tech.
And whether it's like a COVID, you know, adult HR technology conference, or whether it's the HR technology conference from 3 years ago or 2 years ago when there were thousands of people here.
Yeah.
You always run around like a nutcase. And so
every single year. Yeah. And a lot of people have said like, oh, I'm just not in shape for this. Because there is a conference kind of shape you have to be in.
Yes.
And it's part like sleep deprivation, alcohol consumption, and also nonstop conversation, right? Yes. So you're constantly on.
Yeah.
And then you're constantly lacking of sleep.
Yes.
And then there's way too much alcohol in the evening with like cocktail parties and dinners and you know, that like there's this kind of like weird consumption that you would normally just normal
Never
people
do.
Don't do. Yeah.
Never do. Exactly. So it's really funny how Tim and I met. So for a lot of us, we introduce ourselves to people on LinkedIn. One of the funny reasons why I think Tim is going to be an awesome guest for the HR Data Labs podcast is we met on LinkedIn because Tim was asking a totally innocuous question about the things that you would, the discount you might take or the reduction in pay you might take if you were able to stay at home.
Yeah.
And the venom. And he only had, what do you have, only three choices?
LinkedIn only gives you, I think, four.
Okay, four.
And so I was, it was basically like started at like 20% and then like 10 or 5 to 15 and 0 to 5 and then like, or whatever. Or, I can't even remember the four options, but one of them wasn't a pay increase, which
right.
was a, like, it was a hot point right away.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, if I'm going to work from home, I better get a pay increase. Now, first and foremost, like this, I follow a ton of economists online.
Yeah.
Like I just find their stuff fascinating.
Yeah.
Like I always like wish, like I have three sons, two that are in college or two that graduated college, one that's about going into, and I always beg them to be an economist. And they're just looking at me like, I can't think of anything more boring. I'm like, no, I love economists. I like,
yeah.
like all the data and all the like, in, you know, the insights they get. And so an economist did this study and it's thousands of people that just said, hey, the value that you place on working from home, what is that worth?
Yeah.
How much would you take less pay?
An innocuous question.
That's it.
Totally innocuous.
It wasn't saying you should pay people less to work.
Right.
And that's not what my thing was either.
But it was almost as if you said you shot Kennedy.
Oh.
I mean, it was like, or I supported
hundreds of thousands of people viewed it. And it just continues to go.
Right.
Like I will go back out there it's exponentially just continues to go. And I've been called everything.
I know.
And like people are like it's truly, and I even tried to explain it. Like, look, this is not my study. I'm just
right.
placing this out there
right.
as a conversation point to say, interesting
right.
concept.
Right.
Because I do think so many, especially people who desperately want to work from home or
yes.
are working from home and
right.
don't want to go back to the office.
Or have to.
They do place a high value. I mean, the comments alone show how high value it is
yes.
because they're so passionate about
yes.
it. But like that they can't conceptually understand that that's what that exercise is just to know the value. Because the argument is, well, if I'm not in the office and you're not having to pay office space, then you should pay me more.
Right.
I don't disagree with that. I think you're right. There should
that's
be a stipend from work hours. That's not anything to do with this.
Okay, well, so I think what's going to happen is actually one of the things that we're going to talk about today, which is recruiting and recruiting metrics and the recruiter performance. I think one of those topics will actually have to come up inside of that. But one fun thing that we do on this podcast is in humanizing all of our guests, CEOs, CHROs, people who implement analytics, we talk about one thing that no one knows about you.
Yeah.
What's one thing that no one knows about you?
I mean, I've been writing at my blog every day for over 10 years. So I always try to think, like, there's probably nothing that people don't know about me. I'm very transparent.
Well, actually, now, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I have my wife, I only have like one kind of rule, and my wife put that on me, which was you can never blog about me.
Mm.
And
but you know, now you're podcasting about
her. Oh yeah. She never said that though. That's like new stuff, right? So she's got to re-up that. And so once in a while, if it's a very positive kind of thing, I might mention like, you know, my wife or something like that, but it's very rare that you will ever see or know, right? Mm-hmm. Now I'll talk about my boys. I'll talk, you know. Sure. But she was just like, I don't want to be a topic of conversation on your blog.
Totally understandable. She's not a lawyer, is she?
No. She is a medical lawyer. Yeah.
To actually reevaluate that contract. No, just kidding. Hopefully, please don't get a lawyer. But they won't be yelling at me. All right, so the topic is really cool today. What we want to talk about, what you've asked us to talk about, is recruiting and recruiting metrics and the driving performance of a recruiter.
Right? Yeah.
And so the first question I want to ask you is, and we've been asking a lot of people at the conference, is let's talk about the past first before we talk about what's happening now or in the future.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, when we talked about recruiter performance, it was really kind of easy. We were talking about number of requisitions, number of hires, time to fill, recruiter efficiency things.
Yeah.
And to some extent, that's still happening. What was the past? What were the things that you used to see about recruiter performance?
Yeah, it's one of the problems, because I will say even, I think agency recruiting is completely different, and they've always done a really good job of just flat out measuring activity, right? And you would think then that corporate talent acquisition would totally take off on that and say, hey, you need to do this, but they don't. They do these weird metrics like days to fill, which again, I could argue, and I will argue, that it's the worst recruiting metric of all time. Days to fill literally measures nothing.
Yeah.
Because just because you filled something at 26 days versus 27 days, right, doesn't mean you actually made a better hire.
Right.
It doesn't mean that person is going to perform better.
Right.
By the way, by the way, 26 days might be too fast. Maybe it should have been 33 days. Like, that's how innocuous that measure is. Like, it's so crazy that we actually use it as a primary measure for talent acquisition success.
Exactly.
And so that's been a past thing, right? And then when you take a look at actual corporate talent acquisition, individual recruiting metrics, it's rare that we ever get anything from them on an individual side. Hiring manager satisfaction. You can be the worst recruiter in the world, but you are great at making relationships.
Right.
And you're not, the hiring manager's like, oh my God, I love Tim.
Right.
And you're like, oh, does Tim fill your positions? No. But I love Tim.
He's a nice guy.
Again, no correlation.
The Phillies game.
Yeah, no correlation to success. And then the other one that we tend to use historically is quality of hire, which again, the quality of hire has nothing to do with the recruiter. Recruiter goes out, takes a job, post job, sources candidates, find candidates, right, sends them to a hiring manager who then has to make a selection.
Right.
So quality of hire then is really a measure about the performance of the individual you selected. Right. Recruiter didn't select that person.
Right. It's also very subjective.
It's, mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't have to be. You could, like, if you really did quality of hire right, you would actually hire this person at a year or at 6 months. Like, you would actually measure performance versus the person that was in the position prior. Right now you're just like going,
sure,
okay, let's really look at quality of hire. Now you could say quality of applicant, which is then, hey, if I send an applicant to a hiring manager, did they actually interview, did they select? And now you're measuring a little bit different there for quality of applicant. But we tend to do quality of hire, and here's what almost everybody does is for quality of hire, which is the person still there after 90 days?
But that's a different statistic too. I mean, yeah, new hire turnover rate is one of the things that I usually talk a lot to clients about too.
But you can't measure quality of hire because someone stayed 90 days.
No.
No correlation to actual quality, right?
No, it also may be cultural fit, and maybe the person, you know, just didn't get sold the right job, which is
I've worked with and in organizations where that was the measure, and hiring managers had that on their dashboard, and so they would just wait for someone to get 90 days, and then they would fire them after. So they're like, "Yep, hit that, bing, I get my bonus." By the way, 93 days, you're gone because you're worthless.
and I think one of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying to find the right people for the right job at the right time. and make sure that they're successful, not just now, but in the future.
Yeah.
So what are the right metrics then? What should they have been focusing on in the past? What they really work?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll give a shout out to Jerome, the CEO over at Smart Recruiters. There's one that he put together in his book, which is like hiring velocity, which I really love. I think it's a days to fill type of metric, but in the right way, where you go to a hiring manager and you go, okay, here's the rec. Here's what we have to find. Candidate, you know, A, whatever. When do we need to fill this position by? Of course, I'll go yesterday. That's really funny. But if I actually go source and post and the person, and we interview and the person gives 2 weeks and blah, 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 like all of a sudden you start to build this timeline, right? And so let's say that timeline is 8 weeks is the best case scenario. Do we want to give ourselves a little bit of cushion, maybe 9 weeks, whatever that might be? Everyone's going to be different, right? So then your hiring velocity date is that 9 week date. So you're like, hey, December 15th, I need to fill this position by. And then what happens is you have a plus minus time. Did I fill it before that time? Did I fill it after that time? By the way, the hiring manager and I are now into this together. We've just engaged and contracted a date. So, hey, I'm going to go out and source and I'm going to go out and find. But by the way, you have to interview as well. We had the clock is ticking.
Yes.
And so to me, that's a better prescription for like a better recruiter. It's such from a relationship standpoint at the very least, right? Because you have to kind of work towards it. So I love that one. I'm still a giant fan of the funnel metrics on activity because I can take a look at 15 years worth of data in my own shop and go, hey, by the way, and here's where I think a lot of corporate TA leaders fail is that they don't really push the funnel.
Yeah.
They think it's a little micromanaging. But and I go, hey, this isn't about a hammer. This is about development. If I have a recruiter who's great at finding talent, but then but their hiring manager is not like hiring any of them, there's right away I know where the issue is. Okay, it's either a quality of candidate or there's a hiring manager that has like a way like out view of what they really want. Right?
They're looking or they haven't articulated the requirements better.
But instantly you can see by the ratios, right, in the funnel what's falling down. And then I can go and help my recruiter. I can like actually develop, right? It's not a hammer. It's a developmental tool. The other piece is if I'm a corporate TA leader and my CEO comes and says, hey, guess what? Oh, gosh, we just signed this big contract. Next quarter, we're going to have to hire 1,000. Most TA leaders will say, great, we'll work harder. We'll work 24/7. We'll get it done. And they fail. Instead of going, hey, by the way, I can tell you right now our capacity is 480. Exactly. You said you want 1,000. We cannot make 1,000 happen with what we have.
Right.
But based on all of our data that we've collected, here's what I need. I need X number of recruiters. I need X more recruitment marketing job advertising dollars. I need whatever we have to do.
Right.
But you do not sign up for the 1,000.
Right. Well, or you say we can hire RPO resources.
Exactly.
That will enable us to get there.
You have all of those all those tools.
To do that.
Yes.
Is your date fungible?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in those conversations, I think what we see when a TA leader really has those conversations with a CEO, instantly they're elevated to like a CFO level type of thinking, right? Which is, we're making decisions based on data, not based on feel and heart and hard work. Working harder is not a TA strategy, and yet so often that's what I see TA leaders doing.
But they're also business processes. Hiring 1,000 people is a business function.
Yeah.
It's creation of a business out of nothing. And you can't give that much pressure to a TA unless they're brought into the entirety of the workforce planning process. You know, is it third quarter or fourth quarter you have to do this? Is it when? Okay, so if it's fourth quarter, great. Let's get all the leaders together to talk about the structure, how we're doing this. Are we going to change our skill profiles? Are the job descriptions all there? There's so much stuff that has to back up.
Exactly.
And so having the metrics along the way, to your point, creates that basically the business process or the business plan.
Yeah.
To get it to happen. And you're right. The elevation of that TA leader to the CHRO to get that into that process and help the workforce planning process. It's a different conversation.
Yeah. I do consulting with like enterprise level TA people. And a lot of times I'll hear the conversation will be like, well, my CEO forced us to use a headhunting firm. And I'm like, and when we sit down with the CEO without the TA leader in the room, I just don't trust that they can get it done. This is a super important position for us. We have to get this done.
Hmm.
And so you're going outside to somebody that you think has better expertise than you have inside.
So why weren't they just honest though, with the TA?
They always like beat around the bush. Like, oh, I know this. I know Johnny over at Spencer Stewart from back in the day, blah, blah, blah.
They hired this great person.
I literally had this happen when I was running TA at a health system. I had just gotten hired in and like kind of gotten landed on my lap, like this chief nursing officer retainer search that our CEO had signed. It was getting ready to sign again. So for a year they hadn't signed, didn't find anybody. And now they're going to re-up. And I said, no. And the guy, the retained search firm went above my head and went to the CEO. And he all of a sudden get the call, you know? And I'm like, look, like, he's like, Tim, like, hey, you're new here. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I go, give me 30 days. And if I don't, if I can't find your person in 30 days, then, you know, and he's like, who was this kid, right? Like, we've been working for a year.
Right.
And so we went through the process and we got him candidates and I'm like, look, we're not, this is not, I have a team and I have people that we will actually, you know, make this happen. Like, you know, and whether you're, if you're going to tell me that you're going to spend 150 grand a year for nothing, and then another 150 grand, that 300 grand, I can get three great recruiters
right.
that will produce for us. Like, stop the madness.
I think a lot of times people forget the fact, and it's really easy these days to do this, that talent acquisition is very much a data-driven process, and it gets lost because it has a lot of relationships. Talent acquisition also has a lot of relationships that are built up across networks, and not just LinkedIn. I'm talking, you know, the old networks that used to exist where you find talent because someone knew someone knew someone. But there's so much data, probably too much data now. There's the job boards, there's LinkedIn, there's Glassdoor, there's a lot of things, and the competition for what's noise versus what's real, the skills versus the job description versus the people, with so many people on the look for real jobs, with so many people who are so confused about compensation, they're so confused about the great resignation and life and whatever.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking subscribe. This podcast is made possible by salary.com. Now, back to the show.
Let's transition from the past to how are people keeping all of this in order to, and recruiters especially, how are they putting this all in order to be able to make better decisions with all that data around?
Yeah.
How does this happen?
Well, I mean, here at HR Tech, we see a ton of middleware coming into the market, right? That is basically, I mean, the average enterprise TA stack is going to have 20 to 25 different pieces of technology. Mm-hmm. Even if you have Workday, right? Which is like one system. Sure. Like, yeah. It's one system, but then you have to add in all this other stuff to actually make it work. So on average, if you have 25 pieces of technology, you have 25 data sources, there has to be an entire BI middleware stack that's going to pull all of that stuff in and actually give you the insights you need.
Right.
And that's like one of the biggest growth areas in TA right now.
A lot of the clients we speak to, though, one of the fundamental problems is their underlying demographic data is terrible on the employee side.
Forget
about the applicants or the jobs, the job description, job architecture is awful, and not having good skill taxonomies or job taxonomies, and the data, the descriptions are just like ancient.
Yeah,
even for newer companies, the descriptions aren't in a place where you'd want to even put them on the web.
Yeah,
and so how do they get started?
I mean, I do think AI is going to have a big influx on this, especially when it comes to the internal mobility side. I think we're going to start to see, like right now, like the evolution of how AI is impacting HR and TA across the board is just infancy. I mean, you know, when you go out there and you take a look at some of those technologies and the ability, like there's podcast software right now where you can literally, I could read two paragraphs and basically then just give them an overline of what I want to talk about in text. And the AI would actually, in my voice, build the entire podcast.
The script is a beautiful technology.
Yeah. but if you imagine like on job descriptions and all that, I foresee like a time in the near future where an HR person will never, ever write another job description. They will review, they will make some adjustment, right? But the reality is you're going to have AI that will write that 1,000 times better in a voice that is, you know, less biased. You know, than what we would write ourselves, you know.
But I hope in the future, those taxonomies that already exist become common, just like ONET and the SOCs and all the other taxonomies that the government were pushing a long time ago, that they all come together and we speak one language.
So that's kind of the blockchain of recruiting, right? Like I had a company reach out and they're like, hey, can you do we want to do a webcast on the blockchain and recruiting. And I'm like, That's not really a webcast. That's kind of a, like a sentence we could talk about, like, because it's not really there. No. But I think we all foresee a future where, hey, if I had one profile of my work life professionally, I had in not just my resume kind of experiences, but I had in my performance data, and I had in like all the, my projects I've worked on.
Right.
I had peer reviews. Yeah. And I'm now carrying that profile with me from job to job to job in a blockchain way.
Absolutely.
That's verified and valid. Now, the people who love that are people who will work their butts off and are good.
Yeah.
The mm-hmm. people who hate that are the slacks.
Or who had terrible performance reviews.
Worked for a crappy company, crappy boss,
crappy manager,
someone that was like, that was racist or genderist or what. Exactly. I mean, all those things, right?
Right. But I think the other problem is, and the thing you're highlighting is transparency.
Yeah.
The ability for us as HR to get out of the silos and get out of the crapper. Everything has to be quiet. Everything has to be hush-hush. I can't tell you how many times when I worked for Morgan Stanley in compensation, I had to tell people, if you talk about compensation, you're fired.
Yeah.
And they said to me, what are you talking about? It's my compensation. I said, no. It's between you and Morgan Stanley. Sorry, Morgan Stanley, I love you. But we said, you know, it was part of between you and the bank.
Well, yes, yeah, it's every company's that way, right? When they, I mean, that was one of those things that you just did. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the sites come up and then everyone knows everything.
Yeah, I'm trying to early
90s. No, yeah, too, yeah.
But that culture still exists in some companies.
For sure.
And then you have the others that, you know, Zappos, who said, you know, everything's free, everything's open, let the data go, you know?
Hey, speaking of transparency and data, like in my own recruiting shop, we like all of our funnels individually and as a team are all transparent.
That's great.
So any recruiter that when we come to like our weekly meetings and team meetings and client meetings and all this, we're bringing all of our data.
Yeah.
And if there's a recruiter that had a bad week or there's a recruiter that decided to, you know, slough off or whatever, but it shows, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not meant to be a stressor. It's meant to be, hey, understand if someone's being successful, take a look at why. I mean, there's no magic, you know, kind of secret sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we have a recruiter that's failing and we go and say, hey, you know what, for a month, let's increase the activity by 20%, magically they become really good again. And you're just kind of like, and even my own team, which knows this, and we have a really tenured team that stays around, and they'll go, it's not about quantity, it's about quality. And like, yeah. No, it's about both. I mean, it depends on what you want out of life, yeah. But it's both. It's not one or the other. You, as a recruiter, you should never send an awful candidate. Why would you ever do that? At the same time, there is a level of activity you have to send. And that when we talk about recruiter performance, like right now, everyone's begging for talent. And when I go in and I talk to TA leaders, there's usually three common things that will always happen. One is that potentially they're just not using their technology, which is common,
yeah.
But they want to replace it. I want to replace my tech because our recruiters are only using 30% of the ATS. Oh, what do you want to get? Oh, that ATS? So they're going to use 30% of that one? Like, can we first get them to use 100% of it and then let's talk about new tech, right?
So there's requirements you're missing.
Yeah.
It's not there.
And then the second thing is just flat out like the lack of funding for job advertising. Turns out marketing works.
Yeah.
But they do so little of it because they still like 90% of the shops I run into are post and pray. We post a job, we pray for somebody to apply, and that's our entire recruitment marketing strategy.
Tim, let me ask you a question though about that. There's so much supply right now. There's so much supply. And obviously there's so much demand. You would think that the level of activity was high anyways because there are so many people leaving and they're looking for something else. They're looking for something new and fresh. They think the grass being greener is
yeah.
in reality right now because of what's happening.
Yeah, the great resignation, I think, is a misnomer. It's just a great reshuffle. And people aren't leaving to leave. We'll see stories, right, in media, like, oh, Mary left and she's going to take a break for a year, blah, 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 you know, because work's changed, you know. And I'm like, okay. But the reality is people are resigning from your company because you're not paying them enough and somebody else is going to pay them more.
We've definitely seen compensation pressures. That's true.
Well, if you think about like the last few decades, like before like the last 2 years, every time you would talk to somebody about like why they stay at a company, why do they have tenure? It's always, oh, you don't leave a company, you leave a boss, or you don't blah, blah, blah. And they had all this crap that we've been throwing at people nonstop. Well, you know, all those studies came from was, hey, if we take compensation away and it's equal, now what's the most important thing? Oh, being challenged at work, working for a great boss, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out pay matters, though.
Well,
if you say, hey, I'm making 50, but you'll pay me 70, guess what? I don't care if that boss is a little crappier over there. 20K is a lot.
Yeah, but the why is it that they start looking? They come back from a meeting where they're pissed off. it's not that they look, there's nowhere where, I take that back, more and more jobs are being advertised with comp. But in the past, jobs weren't advertised with comp. Or, you know, I don't know, you're a recruiter, you tell me, you know, is comp more prevalent on recs now?
It should be, because all of our data shows that when we do A/B testing on job postings, the ones with comp always get more applicants.
So if I have a crappy day at work and I start looking at LinkedIn or Indeed or whomever,
you'll see more of that, yeah.
But the reason I did it isn't because my comp sucks.
No.
It's because something happened. I had a bad conversation with my boss. You know.
Yeah, but I don't think that's all of that right now, though. I think there's a lot of this where people are, right. It's a snowball effect where you're like, holy crap, Johnny just got a new job and got a 25% sure. increase. I got to start working, you know.
Right.
And companies are going to have to make some real big comp adjustments to like keep their people and just say, we're taking that off the board. We're a great place to work. You know?
Well, that's what we're hearing now. We're talking to a lot of companies who are saying, look, we haven't changed our ranges in a long time. We need help.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year, everybody took a pause. I mean, a lot of the comp stuff stayed silent. So they're looking and they're going, wow, it's been 4 or 5 years since we did any structure change. Let's do that now. We're seeing this a lot in the small and mid-sized companies, not the large as much because they do that stuff internally.
But yeah.
We're hearing a lot from small and mid-sized on that.
Yeah, I agree. The third thing that I see in organizations, no, I mean, just to get back to that, because I'm sure someone's going, well, hey, you said three, you gave me two.
it's
flat out recruiter performance is we have TA leaders that refuse to measure the performance of the recruiters and also say, hey, by the way, you got hired to do a job. And there's a level of performance that needs to take place. And when we turn that on in organizations, first what we'll see is there's probably 30 to 40% of recruiters, it will just flat out leave.
Yeah.
They'll and not always leaving your company. They'll go back into other areas of HR or other areas within customer service. Like because they're like, look, I didn't take this job to recruit. I took this job to administer a recruiting process. I love the tactical aspect of this.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's not what we're doing anymore, right? We're hunting. We're not farming.
Right.
And when you start making them hunters, instantly what you'll see, though, is those who actually like to hunt and those recruiters that know how to recruit, your capacity will go up. So you'll lose recruiters, but you'll actually probably stay the same. And then as you fill in some backfills on those recruiters, your capacity exponentially gets better. And people are always like, well, yeah, but then I'm going to feel pressure and I'm going to feel this. Like, no, like, that's not what this is about. I don't ever measure my recruiters to be a hammer. Right. It's to help them be more successful.
Right.
And so if I want someone that wants to be successful, I'm going to help you be more successful.
That's great.
But if you believe that I'm doing this because I'm trying to fire you,
right.
then you might as well just leave now.
Right.
Because we are not on the same page. Yes. I want people that want to be successful and I'm going to help you get there.
So let me play this back for you. So what you're talking about is a culture of performance aided. Or informed by the metrics, enabled by the metrics, not hammered by the metrics.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's where too many leaders feel like if I turn on metrics that I'm micromanaging and then they're going to hate me, you know, or whatever.
And that's
it's just the wrong culture. Right. Yeah.
That's the difference between the CFO's office and HR, especially TA. Because the CFO's office uses the metrics as guideposts to change strategy.
Yeah.
Whereas HR has always used metrics appropriately to hammer.
Discipline.
Like performance management.
Yeah.
You haven't submitted your performance management. You haven't. We don't use metrics to say, hey, the business is going this direction. I think we need to look at the way we do things in order to match that.
Yeah.
So Tim, we need to go.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining the HR Data Ops
podcast. I love talking shop. This is great.
We're going to need to do this again soon.
Okay.
There are a million things we can talk about in the world of recruiting to talk about this. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Dwight.
Thanks for having me here again.
And thank you for listening and watching. And we will be talking to you soon. If you like the podcast, please subscribe. And if you know somebody who might find value in the podcast, please send it their way. Thank you very much. Take care and stay safe.
That was the HR Data Labs podcast. If you liked the episode, please subscribe. And if you know anyone that might like to hear it, please send it their way. Thank you for joining us this week and stay tuned for our next episode. Stay safe.